KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Khan Academy started when Salman Khan posted a video online to help his 12-year-old cousin pass a math test. Today, Khan has made more than 3,000 videos about topics such as organic chemistry, photosynthesis, and more. Khan's videos have been viewed more than 200 million times, and in his new book, he talks about how human interaction could be the route to solving America's education crisis. He spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on February 6th, 2013.
Very, very exciting to be here. Very, very neat venue. And before we start, I'm actually curious about kind of the makeup of all of you. I mean, this is kind of a neat type of event where we can kind of just speak to the whole community here. How many of y'all are kind of active users of Khan Academy? Oh, very good. Oh, excellent. And how many of you have no idea what Khan Academy is about and you just thought that something interesting was going on here? Very good. So we have something. And how many of you are teachers? Very good. And how many of you are teachers that have used Khan Academy? And it's okay if... Very cool. No, this is going to be an exciting evening, hopefully. And as was introduced, I'm going to spend maybe a little over half of our time telling a little bit about what we're doing. Maybe some of this you know, maybe some of it you don't. But then really, just I'm really eager to hear from y'all, your thoughts, your questions, and everything else. So for those of y'all who use Khan Academy, or those of y'all who know a little bit about it, you know that it's most known for this collection of videos that I started making, and now we have a few other folks making them. But just to get everyone on the same page, I'm going to show a montage of those videos right now. They start off with some of the more classic-type Khan Academy videos, and then you'll see how some of the videos have evolved a little bit. And then I'll talk about what we think Khan Academy can be, where we think it's much more than just a library of videos. So let me get the...
We could integrate over the surface, and the notation usually is a capital sigma. All of these interactions are just due to the gravity over interstellar, or almost you could call it intergalactic. This animal's fossils are only found in this area of South America, a nice clean band here. Notice this is an aldehyde, and it's an alcohol. Is there 30 million plus the $20 million from the American manufacturer? They create the Committee of Public Safety, which sounds like a very nice committee.
This is not Eve.
No, Botticelli's portrayed the ancient goddess of love.
This is 6 times 6 times 6, or 216.
I'm told the humidity makes it feel hotter. Why is this?
Excellent question, LeBron.
Let's just, like, make it 11.
Play with the pendulum and get a feel for how it moves.
Function as a bridge rectifier.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
If this does not blow your mind, then you have no emotion.
I can always gauge the intelligence of a crowd by how much they appreciate Euler's identity. So y'all are doing very well. So just to fast forward to where Khan Academy is today, and I'll talk a little bit about how all of this got started. We're kind of at a scale that it's hard for me to imagine, but we also think to some degree we're just kind of at the very beginning of this adventure. We've reached 75 million students since inception, about 6 million students a month. They've watched over 200 million lessons of some kind, and they've done nearly a billion exercises. And I'll talk in a little bit about what the exercises on Khan Academy actually are. But before I go into that, I want to take a step back and talk about kind of how all of this started. And it sounds like some of y'all might know a little bit of this. You rewind to 2004. I was an analyst at a hedge fund in Boston. I just kind of finished my MBA. I had just gotten married. And some family was visiting me from New Orleans. And it was three of my cousins and their parents. And the oldest cousin, Nadia, was 12 years old at the time. And it just kind of came up in conversation. It was over the summer. She was entering into seventh grade, and it turned out that she was being placed into a slower math class. And I was kind of troubled by this. I felt like they didn't fully appreciate what implications that might have for her future, her ability to take advanced courses in high school and then later in college and all the rest. And so I said, well, what was the problem? And Nadia told me, well, I've been a good student my whole life. I've been trying as hard as I can, but I just couldn't get unit conversion, ounces to gallons, kilometers to meters, and all the rest. And so I told Nadia, I said, well, look, you know, we've been having conversations over the last few days, and you're an extremely bright young woman. I'm 100% confident that you can understand units. And, you know, I think she kind of viewed me as just another kind of, you know, I'm adult or older brother type figure who's kind of giving her a pep talk. But I could tell she was kind of rolling her eyes in the inside and saying, oh, you know, whatever, this guy doesn't know. I really can't get units. And I kind of sensed that, and so I said, well, I'm going to take this up as a challenge. So how about you go when you go back to New Orleans, which is where I grew up and where Nadia was living at the time, and every day after work for me and school for you, we get on the phone and we do a tutoring session, and maybe we can figure out some way on the internet so that we can maybe write and see each other's writing. We eventually found, at the time it was this little widget on Yahoo Instant Messenger or Yahoo Doodle where you could doodle little things and the other person could see it, and she agreed. And so we started up, and you know, long story short, the first month she kind of just psyched herself out, thought she was no good at math. It was actually, there were moments where I was wondering whether, you know, what have I gotten myself into? Maybe, you know, there's this, who knows where this is going to go? Maybe I'm doing more harm than good if this doesn't work out. But then about a month into it, something clicked. And then once it clicked and she realized that she could get it, and then she almost got angry that this was what was tripping her up. This was what was the reason why she was being placed into a slower math class. And then she actually started to get a little bit accelerated. She started to move a little bit of ahead of where her class was. And at this point, I say that I became what I like to call a tiger cousin. And I called up her school, and I'm sure many of the educators here would appreciate calls like this. And I said, you know, I really think Nadia Rahman should retake that placement exam. And they said, who are you? And I said, I'm her cousin. But it somehow, we actually did pull it off. She was able to take it. And that same young girl who at 12 was kind of being told that she was no good at math because of this one weakness in what she knew or didn't know, that same girl about 3 years later, sophomore year in high school, was taking calculus at the University of New Orleans because she had maxed out all of her classes in her high school. And that's... And actually, I mean, I now tell Nadia, there's a lot riding on your future. You better be successful. So she's a junior in college now, so she still has to fully prove herself. You know, it was exciting. I kept working with Nadia. I then started to work with her younger brothers. It was just a fun thing for me to do, a way for me to kind of connect with, you know, these cousins who are kind of like my younger brothers and sisters. And I actually started, my background's in computer science. I started to write these little problem generator widgets that were kind of the precursors of some of the exercises on Khan Academy today so that they could get as much practice as they need so that I could track what they were doing. I put a little database behind it. It was helping with our tutorial sessions. But you fast forward to 2006, and by this point I was... The firm I was working for, and I use the firm very generously, it was I was working for my boss and his dog. The dog was the chief economist, and we actually got business cards printed. His wife became a professor at Stanford Law School, so we moved the firm to Northern California. And by 2006, word had gotten around in the family that free tutoring was happening. And so I found myself tutoring every day after work, anywhere between 10 and 15 cousins, family friends, friends of friends, and it was getting difficult. I was really enjoying it, but I had a day job, and I remember distinctly November of 2006. I was at a dinner party with a friend from college, and I, you know, every friend I had, I would show them this software tools that I was writing. And actually, that was the first Khan Academy. I even got the domain name and had a little logo that said Khan Academy at the time. I had no idea about this whole video thing. And I would show people this software. Look, it generates problems. It should give students hints. It keeps track of where they are. And my friend, his name is Zulfikar, he said, well, you know, this is all very cool, Sal. But how are you dealing with all of these people that you're trying to tutor every day? And I'm like, yeah, I'm actually having trouble. You know, it was easier with just one, but now it's I can't do the same type of interaction. And he said, well, you know, why don't you record some videos of your tutorials and put them up on YouTube? Maybe it might help you scale a little bit. And I was immediately dismissive. I said, no. YouTube is for cats playing piano. It's not for serious mathematics. But I went home that weekend, thought about it, got over the idea that it was not my idea, and I it's very hard for someone with an MBA to do that, and I decided to give it a shot, and I made those first few videos, and I mean literally you could go on the YouTube channel, and I sometimes cringe when I see those first few videos, but they were on least common multiple, they were on adding fractions, kind of pre-algebra type concepts. I started doing a little bit of algebra. And then I went to my cousins and I said, look, you know, I'm making this stuff for you. Watch it if you find it useful. I'd like to get your feedback. Maybe you can watch these if you're confused about a topic, if you want to review a topic, if you want to go ahead a little bit. And that way, when we get on the phone in the evening, you can ask me questions and we can go a little bit deeper. And after we did this a little bit, this was about maybe, you know, by this point, we're talking early 2007. It was about 2-3 months into it. I probably had about 30-40 videos done. I asked my cousin, so what do you think? And they somewhat backhandedly told me that they prefer me on YouTube than in person. There's many ways to interpret that. But I believe what they were saying, I'd like to think they like being around me in some way, but what they were saying was that they really appreciated the fact that they had access to me. They really appreciated the fact that I was taking interest in their life, that I was helping to mentor them, that I was helping to coach them. But they were also saying that many times it was probably a little bit stressful for me to explain something to them in real time and say, did you understand? And for them to kind of struggle and had to pretend that they understood because they didn't want me to judge them, even though I tried to be as non-judgmental as possible, I could imagine it was stressful sometimes where we were covering something and I assumed, you know, maybe they were in eighth grade at the time, and I assumed that they knew how to multiply decimals, but maybe they were a little rusty on it. That was something from fourth or fifth grade, and they were embarrassed to ask their cousin, hey, I kind of forgot about decimals. And now with the videos, it was kind of a safe environment. You know, when we were scheduling our time, there were days I had bad days at work where, you know, an investment went bad. There were days where I'm sure, you know, the boy that Nadia was hoping would ask her to the dance didn't ask her, and her mind was someplace else. But we did the tutorial no matter what, and where we were just weren't there ready to engage that day. But now, when she was ready to engage, she could get it at her own time and own pace. And actually, for me too, it allowed me to create the videos when I was ready for it. When I was had the proper level of energy and had the proper level of enthusiasm for what I was about to do. And so I was excited. I just kind of kept going and kept making more and more and more videos. About 60, 70 videos. I was like, hey, that's kind of, it's a decent scaffold of algebra. I mean, we now have 600 videos, so you can kind of never be quite done. But then I said, well, maybe I'll do trigonometry now. And, you know, another 60, 70 videos. Oh, maybe I'll do calculus. And so I just kept going and seeing where this could go. And while that was happening, you know, I had this little software thing. And actually, the first videos were to complement the software. When you're having a problem with the exercises, you watch a video. But the videos just took a life of their own on YouTube. And I suspect, I mean, was anyone here using it in like 2007? I'm curious. Oh, very good. So you all are early. Yes. So you guys were part of that story. I mean, in 2007, you guys were, you know, probably amongst the first few thousand people to use it. And y'all were some of the first folks that made me realize that people who were not my cousins were watching. And not only were they watching, but they started to write, you know, thank you. This really helped. You know, and I don't know how much time y'all spend on YouTube, but most of the comments are not thank you. They're somewhat, yes. And for me, that was a really powerful thing that, you know, I'm just doing this thing for my cousins, but random people all over the planet, even if it's one person, even if it's 10 people, if they're getting value out of it, this is worth my time. And then the letters got even more interesting, got letters to the effect of, hey, this is the reason why I didn't fail algebra. This is the reason why I was able to get into the school of my choice. This is the reason why I want to be a physicist now. This is the reason why I was able to go back to school after retiring from the military. I remember in those early days, I got a letter from a family, actually there were several letters of this, and I immediately got my wife and I showed her the letter. It was so powerful, where it was someone explaining how their children have learning disabilities. Actually, I think it was all three of their children had learning disabilities, and kind of this kind of handcrafted handwriting with voiceover seemed to do the trick. And they said that every night their entire family prays for my entire family. And I mean, that's heady stuff by itself, but just to give you context, I was an analyst at a hedge fund. This does not typically happen outside of maybe a few of our investors, but this is I was getting more reward out of that than even if I had a good day at my job. And so you fast forward, and actually even at those early stages, and this was kind of interesting, and started to percolate in my brain. You know, up to this point, I thought, okay, this is just a nice thing that exists. It's a kind of a free tutor for anybody who might find it useful. But then I started to get some teachers who started to write and say, well, you know, at minimum, I'm telling some of my students that this could be a supplementary resource for them. But I've started to realize that I can have them watch the videos at their own time and pace, and maybe I can use classroom time for something more interactive. Something more where the students are helping each other and they can get more direct feedback with me. Bless you. Not too different than frankly what I was able to do with my cousins, where they were able to get the videos at their time and pace, and when we did the tutorials, we could go deeper. We can do more interaction. And so this just continued. The usage just kept growing. You fast forward to 2009. I frankly just had trouble focusing on my day job. Everything I was thinking about is what's the next video I could make. I was literally, constantly pressing refresh on videos to seeing what people were saying, what questions they had, what videos I should make next. There were several other bouts where if I had a bad day or bad week at work, I would say, well, I need to do Khan Academy full time. But by this time, it was just too much. Set it up as a not-for-profit and sat down with my wife and figured, well, it's worth a shot. If I can focus on this for a year, hopefully I can get someone to notice that this is a project worth supporting in some way.
Salman Khan, the author of The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. Khan is also the founder of Khan Academy, an online series of video tutorials. He spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on February 6, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Salman Khan in a moment. 823 94.9 KUOW. Comments by Tom Flanagan about child pornography stir up trouble for the former advisor to Prime Minister Stephen Harper. We'll hear about it later this evening. Also, a remembrance of British literary sensation Sylvia Smith, who died Saturday at age 67. A tiny community in Newfoundland admits it can't continue to exist, and most of the residents ask the province to resettle the townspeople. And a doe and her fawn stranded on thin ice are blown to safety in an unlikely helicopter rescue. Details on all these items tonight at 11. Forecast for the Seattle area for tonight. Lows in the 40s, rain at times. Friday's prediction highs around 60, mostly cloudy. Chance of rain. Friday night lows in the 40s, mostly cloudy. Saturday highs somewhere in the 50s, mostly cloudy. Chance of rain in the afternoon.
If you missed donating your vehicle in 2012, now's a great time to begin planning for this year. Call 1-866-KUOW-CAR. We'll handle all of the paperwork and you'll receive a tax deduction for 2013. Call 1-866-KUOW-CAR.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Salman Khan has been sharing online video tutorials about a variety of academic subjects since 2006. In 2009, he quit his job as a hedge fund analyst to work with Khan Academy full-time. The videos offer a straightforward, relaxed, and interactive approach to education, something Khan strongly advocates. Khan has a new book called The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. He spoke about Khan Academy and his views on education on February 6, 2013, at Seattle's Town Hall. Next, he talks about how he secured funding for Khan Academy.
You know, like a lot of I guess, entrepreneurial stories. I mean, this is, in some ways, one, it's a not-for-profit entrepreneurial story, but still kind of starting to start something new. You start very optimistic, very idealistic. You think it's all, you know, I was already having some preliminary conversations with some possible funders and foundations, but they didn't amount to anything. And frankly, by about 9 months later, I started to get pretty, almost depressed, kind of cynical about this. I probably pitched to 50 foundations, 50 folks, they weren't kind of really responding. But I was getting kind of $5, $10 from random people, maybe some of y'all in those early days, off of PayPal. And that was helping to some degree. But then all of a sudden, I got a $10,000 check in the mail. And so I immediately see who sends it. Her name was Ann Doerr. I check her emails on, was with it. She was actually local. She's in Palo Alto. It's the town right next to where I was in Mountain View. So I immediately sent her an email. I said, thank you so much. This is the largest donation ever to Khan Academy. If we were a physical school, you would now have a building named after you. Which I have now discovered is very inexpensive. And she immediately emailed back and said, well, you know, we should really chat. I'm local. Why don't we meet? And we literally, I think it was maybe a week later, or actually it wasn't even that long, we met in downtown Palo Alto at an Indian buffet restaurant. And asked me, so, you know, what's your vision for what you're doing? And I said, well, when I filled out the IRS forms, they asked, what's your mission? And I said, oh, a free world-class education for anyone, anywhere. And she said, well, that's ambitious. what do you think that means? And I said, well, you know, it's definitely a mission, and it's a long road to getting there, and who knows if we'll ever quite, you know, be able to check that box off. I suspect we might not ever. But to me, I want to keep making videos. We can translate the videos. But on top of that, we can create exercises. You know, and I was showing her some of the screenshots of some of the stuff that I had already built for my cousins. And actually, by that point, several tens of thousands were using the software. We could have ways for students to communicate with each other. We could create dashboards for teachers. A few summer camps that actually used Khan Academy in that way. And she said, well, you know, it's ambitious, but it seems like you're actually making progress. You're getting traction. How are you supporting yourself? And in as proud of a way as possible, I said, I'm not. Anne kind of nodded, and we parted ways. She got on her bicycle, I got in my car, and I drove home. And right when I was getting into the driveway, this is like literally about 15 minutes later, I get a text message from Anne. And the text message reads, you really need to be supporting yourself. I've just wired you $100,000. So... So that was a good day. And if Anne sends me a text message right now, I might have to pause, and you never know. But that, frankly, was kind of, I mean, that meant the world to me. It meant that at minimum I could continue on this journey. But it kind of was the first in a series of events that just started to happen that just got stranger, but in a good way, and stranger as we moved on. 2 months later, this is now summer of 2010. So not that long ago, I was running a little summer program for middle school kids, and it's really just because, you know, I was doing all this virtual stuff, but I was really eager to see, okay, if you don't have a classroom based on lecture anymore, what can you do? What kind of projects could you do? And so I had six middle school kids playing a game of Risk. And then I had the other 20 kids trading securities based on the outcome of the game of Risk. And it's a very good game. And while that was going on, I got another text message from Anne, and which I now take very seriously. And it was actually a series of text messages, and it read something along the lines of, I'm at the Aspen Ideas Festival right now. I'm in the main pavilion. Bill Gates is on stage. Last 5 minutes talking about Khan Academy. I mean, this was a strange, almost surreal text message. And so I immediately go to the nearest seventh grader, boot her off of a computer, and I start looking for some type of verification that something is happening. And within minutes, there was little tweets, blog posts. Within a few hours, there was actually some audio recording of it, and it actually happened. Bill Gates was on stage. I had no clue. He was saying how he uses Khan Academy for himself. He uses it with his children. And at which point, I had this whole mixture of feelings. That on one level, I was excited. On another level, I was scared. You know, those videos were for Nadia, not Bill Gates. And then, frankly, I didn't know what to do next. Do I call him? And actually, some of the folks who are associated with them are here now, so they can appreciate today the kind of turmoil they put me through then. But they waited 2 weeks, and then I got a call, and I was literally in my closet recording a video call from Seattle. I should pick this up. And it was Larry Cohen. I'm Bill Gates' chief of staff. You might have heard that Bill's a fan. Yeah, I heard that. And he would love to learn how he can support you if you have some time in the near future. He'd love to fly you up to Seattle. And I was looking at my calendar for the month right at that moment, completely blank. So I said, yeah, you know, I'm, you know, maybe Wednesday, 2:45. I've got to cut my nails, but you know, other than that, I think I could meet Bill Gates. And so we had the meeting right at around the same time. Folks from Google reached out as well. They actually asked a very strange question: what would you do at $2 million? And I said, is this an open question? Because I could, you know, buy new shoes. I mean, but it was about education. And it kind of went from nothing to some of the most incredible people and organizations on the planet saying that, no, we're going to validate this and we believe in it. And by the fall of 2010, kind of Khan Academy was allowed to become more than just me. We had the resources to hire up a team, get software engineers working on it. And what we started really focusing on, and you know, this is kind of an evolution of some of the things that I had started on with my cousins, is this knowledge map. If you go to the site now, it's actually a more modern version of even what we're seeing in the screen, and we actually have huge plans over the next year to really rethink how this can be done. But the idea is fundamentally the same. That right over here, and I'll show you what these look like in a second, these are kind of concepts. So this is addition and subtraction. Then you go to decimals, exponents and radicals. And as you go further and further down this knowledge map, you're going to more and more advanced topics in mathematics. And you saw the videos. They're much, much broader than just math. But our exercises, the interactive part right now is math. We hope over time to make that also cover everything. And the model is very simple. As a student shows proficiency in a more basic concept, then they're kind of suggested to move on. They can jump around if they want, but you just move down as you master concepts. And it's a somewhat intuitive thing to do. It's how a video game would work. You master one level, and then you move on to the next. But the one thing I point out is that this is not the way that a traditional academic model works. And when I say that, if we look at what happens, this is the schools we all grew up in, and it's not about people. It's actually about a system where we group students together, usually by age, and then we move them together at a set pace. We have some kind of pattern of lecture and homework, and then we have an assessment. And at that assessment point, you might get an A, you might get a B, you might get a C. You can even fail that kind of, you know, kind of a formative assessment, or you could fail that unit assessment. But then you'll move on, the class will move on to the next concept. Even though you identified a weakness in a more basic one. You got 20%, you didn't understand 20% of exponents, well, we're going to move on to negative exponents now. You didn't get 30% of linear equations, we're going to move on to quadratic equations now. And so, you know, the analogy that I draw is, imagine if you were to build a multi-story house the same way, where you get a contractor, and you say, well, you know, the state says we have to build the foundation this first 2 weeks of January, and that's exactly the time that you get. So build the foundation, and the contractor says, well, I don't know if the workers are going to show. Well, just build the foundation. Contractor does what they can. 2 weeks later, you bring the inspector. The inspector says, I don't know. It's not quite structurally sound in that corner right over there. This part isn't quite up to code. The concrete isn't dry over here. I'd give it a 75%. Say, great. That's a C-. Let's build the first floor. And you build the first floor, you give them 3 weeks, same exact process, inspector comes, oh, there's, you know, I would give it a 90%. Great, only 10% structurally deficient. Let's build a second floor. And then you keep doing that layer after layer after layer, and then all of a sudden while they're working on the fourth floor, the whole thing collapses. And your reaction say, oh, I have an incompetent contractor. I have to have a better contractor. Or you say, maybe the inspector wasn't good enough. Maybe we have to have better inspection. But the reality is, it's the process was broken. You had a fine contractor. You had fine inspection, but you were identifying the weaknesses, but you were essentially ignoring them and just building on top of them. And that exact same thing is happening, especially, I think, in mathematics, but probably all subjects. If you have a gap, I mean, we're now seeing in the data students who don't know who, they're in an algebra class, but they don't know manipulating decimals or fractions or negative numbers. In a traditional algebra class, there's no way for them to address it. They're embarrassed. They might not even know that they have those gaps. But if you have those gaps, no matter how smart you are, no matter how good your algebra teacher, you're going to hit a wall in algebra. So this right here, this is kind of what one of those exercises look like. I like to show that, you know, some of them are more classical problems. This one I like to show, I call this Montessori for calculus. It's, you change the slope of the tangent line, so you really get an intuition for what a derivative is. I know this is review for all of you. But, you know, and you can check your answer, and if you want, you can look at a video to get a little bit more context. And we've actually been reworking the site for those, you know, some of y'all might know, we have these tutorials where we're mixing the videos and the exercises together, and we have a bunch of other things we want to do. But it gives you a sense of the type of things you can do with this type of form factor. You know, when all of this started, you know, I'd gotten a few letters from teachers back in even 2007 who were saying, hey, we're using it. I can use class time to not give lecture anymore and do something else with the time. But I still never expected Khan Academy to really be used kind of integrally to what's happening in a classroom. But right at around, you know, this was literally fall of 2010, a local school district reached out, Los Altos Public Schools, and said, what would you do with a fifth grade math classroom? And I thought this was just kind of just a pie in the sky, you know, brainstorming type of thing. And I said, well, you know, these teachers have emailed me. They're saying that they find that it's actually more productive if they use class time for something other than lecture. And if you do use class time for something other than lecture, and the students are allowed to interact with each other, they can interact with the teacher, it also opens up the possibility of having every student learn at their own pace. So I said, well, maybe we let every student learn at their own pace using a tool like Khan Academy, master concepts. If they have difficulty, they have the teacher there, they have their peers there, and we'll give the teachers as much data as possible so that they can really see where students are. And somewhat surprisingly, because we literally were a one going on two-person organization at that time, we didn't have office space, they said, sure, let's try it out. And we started with two fifth-grade classrooms and two seventh-grade classrooms. And this right over here is a dashboard that kind of shows it's kind of evolved since then, but it's the same general idea. Each row here is a student in a classroom. You can kind of view this as a spreadsheet. And then each column there is one of those concepts that you saw on that knowledge map. And the model, and once again, this emerged from the classrooms. The teachers actually, I remember in particular one teacher drawing this diagram. This is what she wanted to be able to understand where kids are. And the model that we saw emerging in the classroom is the teacher could observe this. It would turn red and blue and green in real time. And they could say, okay, this cell is green. This student is already proficient in dividing fractions. This cell is blue. This student is working on units, but no need to worry. This cell is red. That student is having difficulty with angles too. And so the model that emerged is that the teacher could go work with that student directly in a very focused intervention. Or if there's a couple of other students who are proficient, they can let them be the first line of attack. This is another dashboard that we give access to teachers, and you know, just to understand what's going on here, this horizontal axis is days on the site. This vertical axis is just a count of how many modules are completed, and each of these lines represent a student. And in every math class that we were in, or even these math classes, right when you start, there's a group of students who race ahead, and you see them right over here. They're the ones that are really, these lines are moving up really fast in the beginning. And then you see some kids that are in the middle, and then some kids who are a little bit slower. And in a traditional model, you would say, oh, those kids that race ahead, those are the gifted students. Those are the honor students. These are the average students. These are the slow students. These are the remedial students. And oftentimes, you might start separating them, start tracking them, usually around middle school, and it has all sorts of repercussions on where they might end up later on. But what we're seeing is if you, and we're seeing this in public schools, private schools, charter schools, affluent neighborhoods, underserved neighborhoods, if you let every student learn at their own pace, address many of those gaps that they've been accumulating their whole life. Even if this is an algebra class, letting them address their gaps in basic arithmetic, in pre-algebra, and whatever else. If you let them do that, the same student that started off a little bit below average, and oftentimes very much below average, 2 months later can become the second best student in the class. And we're seeing this over and over and over again.
Salman Khan, the author of The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. Khan is also the founder of Khan Academy, an online series of video tutorials. He spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on February 6, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Salman Khan in a moment, 841, 94.9 KUOW. Cardinals are about to assemble to choose a new pope. A conversation about transition at the Vatican and challenges facing the world's largest Christian denomination tonight at midnight. Forecast for the Seattle area for tonight, lows in the 40s, rain at times. Friday highs around 60, mostly cloudy, chance of rain. Friday night lows in the 40s, mostly cloudy. Saturday highs in the 50s, mostly cloudy, chance of rain in the afternoon. KUOW's Deborah Wong takes a look at the cache of Seattle Sonics memorabilia the team owners left behind when they moved the team to Oklahoma City in 2008. Also, two specialists in the neuroscience field talk about the progress that's been made and the extensive work yet to be done mapping the 100 billion neurons in our brains. And Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Paul Muldoon talks about his new poetry book, Word on the Street, Rock Lyrics, all next hour, beginning right after the 9 o'clock news.
KUOW and Seattle Center present Festal, a year-long series of events highlighting the distinct cultures and common threads of ethnic communities in the Pacific Northwest. Learn more on the events page at kuow.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Salman Khan is the founder of Khan Academy, an online series of video tutorials on various academic subjects. He's also the author of The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. He spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on February 6th, 2013. Next, he takes questions from the audience.
Hello, sir. Thank you for coming and great, great presentation. I have one question about the Khan Academy. I have this question that I'm always trying to figure out. What sort of technology are you using where you write on the blackboard and get the different colors to
Yes. I have a little pen tablet that you literally could buy. I mean, the one I used for the first 2,000 videos was an $80 Wacom bamboo tablet you could buy at Best Buy. Now I have a $200 one. I treated myself on my last birthday. I use a piece of shareware called Smooth Draw 3, which is just an art program, and I just make the background black. I pick some nice pastel colors that, to me, look like chalk on a black background, and I use screen capture, and I use Camtasia Recorder to capture the screen. So it's a pretty, I mean, if you already have a computer, it's probably somewhere between $200 or $300 worth of equipment is what I do, and there's other things that you could probably get that are maybe even cheaper.
So what was that tablet called?
Oh, Wacom bamboo tablet. Yeah, any place. They should pay me. I'm endorsing, selling their product. Oh, I'll go over here.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've used your videos a lot. I just graduated from UW. I did a biochem degree, so I use your science videos a lot.
Oh, awesome.
So thank you for
send the video
that.
In.
I will
send.
Do that. Yeah.
It changed your life.
I did. No, it did. It did. I wanted to ask, after I graduated, I was kind of looking for something to do, and so I decided to try tutoring people, and so I was tutoring some high school kids, and I was tutoring some other people, and I found it hard to tutor in something that you sort of get naturally. Mm. Something like math, to me, sort of just came naturally, and when I had to tutor somebody in math, it was really hard for me, and so sometimes I'd show them a video of yours, and then they'd be like, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah,
you know, but I was wondering if you have an explanation for how you're able to, did you have to learn all that stuff yourself and then reteach it, or are you just inherently like good at teaching? Because it just seems weird that like every single video you make, it seems to make so much sense to everyone.
Oh,
like,
no.
You know what? I really do think that that's every single person that I talk to, because a lot of people in my college used it and they all said, you know, these videos make so much more sense. And so how do you explain why you're able to make so much sense?
Well, thank you. You're making a brown man blush. If I had a theory, it would be, you know, when I was young, I was always obsessed with kind of trying to understand why something was, and you soon find it, and it sounds like you too. I mean, in mathematics, you realize that when you really get it, it starts to become very, very simple. And I think maybe what I do that I often don't see in some type of, you know, especially instructional videos and things like that, is I'm very transparent with my thought processes, almost to the point that, you know, it's a vulnerability. I mean, people, like, you know, I'm doing a calculus problem, but even while I'm doing a calculus problem, I have to remind myself about arithmetic. I have to remind myself about negative numbers. I have to remind myself about why something works, and I'll say it out loud. So I think maybe to some degree it's that transparency of thought. I think another thing is that, and it was a luxury that I started doing it for Nadia, because it allowed me to be very relaxed. You know, if the first video Bill Gates had come and said, make a video for me, Sal, and here are some resources, I think I would have fallen under the trap that a lot of kind of professionally produced education content, it's very polished, it's edited, it's scripted, it looks nice, but it sounds like your GPS device. You know, the next step in photosynthesis is when the mitochondria, and you're like, well, that's nice, but I can't really connect with that. There's not a human being on the other side of that. And so I think there's a connection there. You know, the other thing I try to do, and this is something, you know, I was always the kid that, you know, if someone was even a little bit patronizing, I would get angry and like storm out of the room. And so I'm highly sensitive to tone. And so I try my best to not be either talk above people or be patronizing. And, you know, what I tell people is you need to sound like you respect the person that you're talking to. And the best way to sound like you respect someone is to respect them. And thank you. That's the title of my next book. Thank you. But seriously, and if you do that, if you say, look, the person I'm talking to, and for me, it's talking to an imaginary person. I'm talking to my cousin. I'm talking to, maybe I'll start imagining some of you as the person I'm talking to. But I'm like, look, that's a person smart as anybody else. They just don't understand this concept just yet. I seem to have it kind of a way of thinking about it in my head, and let me just try my best to communicate it. But thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, first of all, thank you. I got my first A this year in math since 1997, and it was in linear algebra.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Thank you. My question is...
Send in a video.
I'll do that. Thank you. My question is, I studied abroad in Mexico, and this last, a month ago, I brought down a netbook full of the Spanish videos to the family I lived with. And the titles of the videos, when you download them, are just a mix of letters and numbers, so I went through and gave them titles in Spanish.
Yeah.
Do I have permission to put that on uTorrent, or where should I upload those?
Oh, yeah. So these are the Spanish translations?
Yeah, and I labeled them all with Spanish titles instead of just the numbers and letters.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, We're very free about this. Our entire library is available on BitTorrent. We want it distributed in any way possible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's essentially anyone who uses it in a non-commercial way, use it, and use it in any way possible. And, yeah, and actually, if you're doing some of that stuff, I mean, let us know, and maybe we can make sure that everyone has access to those.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much.
No, again. Thank you. Yeah, no. No, it's awesome.
I'll try to be fast. So I just became a father 3 months ago, and I'm thinking about education. I have a friend who homeschools and uses the Khan Academy, and it seems really great, and so I'm thinking about homeschooling. That's part of where I'm coming from. The other part is I'm a teacher. I'm a university professor, and we're constantly under pressure to use more technology, and that's also a way that the university saves money, and maybe they can have larger classrooms because we're doing more stuff online. So, you know, as I was hearing your story about the couple of fifth grade classrooms that wanted to use it, I was imagining that the story might take a direction where the principal said, "This is awesome. We
replace
can fire
every
our staff
all the human beings with robots."
Yeah, right. You know, so this is a perennial problem. Right. So a part of me loves this, and a part of me wonders what the future of education or my own job, you know, will be
no,
like.
It's a fair question, and I think any tool can be used well, and any tool can be used horribly, and. I would be lying to say if I haven't met folks who have come to me and said, hey, can we increase the student-teacher ratio now? Can we do this? Can we remove the physical experience altogether. And to those, I mean, I say absolutely not. I mean, I have young children. It would be a hypocrite for me to want anyone else's children to have something that, or not have something that I want my own children to have. And I want my own children to go to a physical classroom. But the physical classroom that I want them to go to is one where they're getting more interaction with the human beings than maybe the classrooms that we grew up in. So they're not, you know, just sitting in first grade and, you know, finger on their lip, but it's really about conversation, tutoring peers, etc. So I'm definitely on the side of physical is very important, and the technology isn't to replace the physical, it's to allow the physical to be optimized.
Really? Yeah. Hi. I'm Ananya, and I recently just graduated from a very hands-on engineering college where it was really practical-based.
Was it Olin?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Yeah, there aren't that many.
So my question for you is, like, I think that like the Khan Academy is really good when it comes to explaining certain details and explaining like broad concepts to people in a very linear approach. Mm. But do y'all have any plans to try like more different pedagogical approaches, especially something like spiral learning to explain more complex concepts to people?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a good question. And you know, and for us, frankly, we're still discovering what the tools are and what we can do virtually, what we can't do virtually. And what we hope to see is if we can at least take lecture off the table, we can at least take some of the what you consider more traditional linear learning off the table, and there is a value for that. I don't think it's an either-or proposition. Then it opens up time, it opens up resources for the more open-ended, the more project-y type learning. But with that said, we are trying to also do some of that ourselves. The computer science that we just launched on Khan Academy, it's not video-based. It's an environment where you have projects, you can create things, you can create a profile, have your things in your portfolio. Other people can give you feedback. So yeah, absolutely. We want to be able to do as at minimum free up time for more of that, but also maybe build tools to allow more of that to happen.
Very quick.
What? Okay. How am I? Okay. Yes.
I'm a fan. My name is Shalendra. And so Khan Academy is obviously the nonprofit, but after seeing the success of Khan Academy, there are some companies that have sprung up for profit, like Udacity and Coursera. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on operating Khan Academy in an ecosystem world where you're doing the same thing for a nonprofit, but there are companies funded by successful venture capitalists trying to do the same thing for monetary reasons?
Yeah, you know, and it's an interesting thing. I mean, I there's a whole set of reasons why we set up Khan Academy initially as a not-for-profit. It was kind of, you know, what's a positive scenario as a for-profit? Well, maybe you get acquired, maybe you IPO, and that's a good, once again, I could buy new clothes and all the rest. But the not-for-profit scenario, it felt like it could be an organization that never has to stray away from its mission. And, you know, I always get skeptical when someone says I have a double bottom line organization. I say, no, well, it's called bottom line. Like, which one is on the bottom? And oftentimes in a for-profit, the best thing to do to maximize profit is to create a great product, and we see examples like that all over the place. But when push comes to shove and you might have to pick between the mission and the profit, you actually by law have to pick the profit. You have investors that you have a fiduciary responsibility to. And I never wanted that to happen with Khan Academy. It was delusional at the time, but I felt like, you know, what are the institutions that have been able to really last generation after generation, and they're all not for profit. You know, if I pass away, who knows, maybe my kids are spoiled, they take over, who knows what they turn into, some type of fast food business or something. And so that's why I felt it very important for Khan Academy to be a not for profit. Overall, what's happening in the space, I think, is actually a very positive thing. The more capital, whether it's a venture capitalist or it's a philanthropist, that's being used to create learning resources that can be free for people, that's a win. And we're learning from them, and if it's kind of a healthy, and with many of them, we know them, and we're kind of, it's kind of co-opetition or whatever you might want to call it, and it's good. With that said, you know, I think at the end of the day, the legitimacy that you get from being a not-for-profit, the trust that you engender from being a not-for-profit, and frankly, and this is actually the non-intuitive one, we're based in Silicon Valley, and everyone in Silicon Valley said, oh, this is very nice, you're not for profit, but you're not going to be efficient. You're not going to be able to attract the best talent. The best talent is attracted by options. The best talent is attracted by IPOs, by whatever else. And actually, I was worried about that. Maybe I could convince the first four or five people just on mission alone to do this. But and there's actually a case study, Harvard Business School, about Khan Academy, about should they be, you know, will they be able to attract talent? And the answer is not only have we been able to, but we've been able to attract literally the best talent on the planet. Craig Silverstein, who was Google's first employee, wrote the search engine, is working on our team. John Resig, who wrote jQuery, the world's most used JavaScript library, on our team. Ben Kamens, Jason Rosoff, they were the lead developer and designer at one of the top boutique engineering firms at Fog Creek in New York. I mean, I could go down the list. I mean, it's just off the charts people that, frankly, money could not buy. And you know, I always say, you know, person for person, our team versus any startup in Silicon Valley, I just feel very fortunate to work for. And so inadvertently, I think we've also discovered that, and there was actually a study that said this a couple of years ago, that if you really want to motivate people and you really want to get the best talent, money matters insofar as just making sure people can pay their bills, pay their mortgage, send their kids to college. But after that, what really matters is intellectually challenging work and a mission. And we're seeing it firsthand. One more question. So this should be an awesome question.
Awesome. Thank you.
No, I'm kidding. It can be bad. Right? It can be a bad question. Yeah.
So I think that it's fantastic that you can take this great technology and obviously excellent teaching to really disrupt the process of education. But I'm wondering what you think about maybe the opportunities that Khan Academy and the whole sort of online MOOC, whatever, industry or groups of people working have the possibility to change the content that people
yes.
are learning. So especially, you know, in like the STEM area, we have a lot of mathematics in a vacuum and we have this sort of basic sciences, but not so much the engineering and the technology that's obviously very important in this
yeah,
area.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the sort of general life skills that maybe don't get taught so much in the classroom, the empathetic and
yeah.
other skills.
Yeah. No. It's super important. And the way that we think about it is, if we and we're already trying to experiment with some of that with our computer science, and you know, actually I do a lot on kind of finance and things like that are very real world. But the way we've seen it, and it kind of started just very organically with my cousins, is, okay, we're starting with students have this external forcing function. They're in a traditional model. They have these traditional exams. They have these things. You know, they're told that they need to learn pre-calculus, trigonometry, calculus. You know, I think, why not statistics instead of calculus? I mean, they're both important, but one is more relevant. Why not computer science instead of whatever else? But by doing catering to that initially, we're able to get the traction and be able to, and even be used in schools. But a big part of what I hope we can do, and we're already starting that, hopefully, you know, you see what we're doing with computer science, what we're doing with a few other fields. We're starting to introduce interesting simulations into things, interesting games into things. We're hoping that if we can kind of get in, then we can start to introduce new things. I mean, we're already seeing it with Los Altos. We came in just for a fifth grade math curriculum. The kids already had accounts. The kids were already using it in the classroom. They started using the computer science. Los Altos actually got excited about that. Now they're doing computer science for fifth graders. The simple answer is yes. I'm a strong believer in that, but we probably will go through a path that takes us through some very, very traditional content. But we want to do it in a way that really engages students and really makes them appreciate what they're doing. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Salman Khan, the author of The One World Schoolhouse, Education Reimagined. Khan is also the founder of Khan Academy, an online series of video tutorials. He spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on February 6th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from University Volkswagen Audi, committed to providing customer care through the exclusive Passport Service Program, which includes service loaner vehicles, rideshare shuttle service, and a knowledgeable staff. More information online at uvwaudi.com.
Gifts of stock and other appreciated assets.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.